Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comment. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Greetings and salutations, everyone. It is good to be with you once again. And I would like to congratulate the TaylorMade team. Now, let's talk truth. The Mr. Motivator Show, Fitness 360 with Carol, The Joy Doctor, and all the other shows that have been a part of TaylorMade. And of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Ask Jima with Current Events. That's right, you all. We are celebrating our second year on the air. Congratulations to you all for the great work that you continue to do. Now, today we discuss a topic that is near and dear to my heart, poverty. However, I pose the simple question, do we have a poverty crisis or an education crisis? Now, later we will discuss the GOP, the Occupy movement 1 year later, and much, much more. But before we do that, let's get started. Poverty. Now, there's this interesting article entitled Poverty in Education, Why School Reform is Vital, and it reads, "The most important civil rights battleground today is education," writes Nicholas D. Kristof, "and the most crucial struggle against poverty is the one fought in schools. The most important civil rights battleground today is education, and likewise, the most crucial struggle against poverty is the one fight in schools. Still, some Chicago teachers seem to think that they shouldn't be held accountable until poverty is solved. These are steps we can take that will make some difference, and Mayor Rahm Emanuel is still trying some of them, yet the union is resisting. It's unconscionable that until recently, many Chicago elementary students had a school day almost an hour shorter than the national average, and a school year 2 weeks shorter than the national average. Now, I'd be sympathetic if the union focused solely on higher compensation. Teachers need to be much better paid to attract the best college graduates to the nation's worst schools. But instead, the Chicago union seemed to be using its political capital primarily to protect the weak. There's now solid evidence that there are huge differences in the effectiveness of teachers, even within high poverty schools. And I mentioned this article for two reasons. One, poverty numbers were out last week, and there's a lot of different TV shows, talk shows, radio shows that are talking about poverty now. And one in particular that sparked my interest was on the Bill Maher show. There was a guest on, John Legend, and he mentioned this issue about how the unions are really raising this issue in Chicago. And they go on, and people will be on both sides of the fence about should unions be a part of their system and what impact they're having on the system. But John Legend brought up an interesting point that I thought I would mention here, and I want to discuss in the context of poverty. He simply said, if the unions are only focusing on the teachers' jobs and not really advocating for the administrators, then we have a problem. And I'm paraphrasing here. I'm not really putting words in their mouth. But in a nutshell, he was trying to illustrate how important it is for an administrator to have hire and fire privileges for subordinates. And basically he was saying that, yeah, there's a poverty issue in our society, but education, it should be also addressed because education will lift our people out of poverty. So if we don't address the education system vis-a-vis just addressing the poverty issue or vice versa, then we're going to have a problem because we should be attacking both. And so it's interesting that John Legend was having this really good conversation, making this really good point on the one hand. And the other issue that made me bring this up is this thing that Tavis Smiley was brought up. He's going around the country on this book tour, I stand corrected, on this poverty tour to sell his book. I messed up again. He's going on this poverty tour. Now, his book may be a byproduct of selling while he's on the road, but that's neither here nor there. But the simple point that I'm trying to make, he's going on this poverty tour in the battleground streets, really not addressing, at least from the rhetoric I heard, the education crisis. He's just talking about poverty. Now, granted, he's going to battleground states to address poverty when he's not going to states like New Mexico that has been published to have the worst poverty record in the United States. So that begs the question, why is he on the tour? So all of these things that have been coming up in the forefront over the last couple of days really wanted me to bring this to the forefront and ask this simple question. Do we have a poverty crisis or an education crisis in America? And I want you to weigh in on this. And in just a few minutes, we're going to open up the phone lines and get you to do just that. But first, before we do that, I want to introduce to some and present to others the executive producer of Current Events and also the chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting. I introduce to some and present to others no other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, I'm trying to set this story up. I'm trying to talk about the simple fact that poverty is in the news a lot today. I'm trying to talk about the fact that there's an education component to this poverty because it's really a cycle of poverty, not just you're born into poverty and that's it. I mean, I believe it's not your fault because you're in poverty, but you may have an opportunity it could be a choice for you to stay in poverty. And one of the things that really lift people out of the poverty and has been recorded and has been published and talked about for many years is the education system. But if you don't have an education system that's going to work for the children, then how can you really address the poverty situation? So, Jima, I pose the question to you. Do we have an education problem or do we have a poverty problem in America?
We have both. I mean, I don't know if you can honestly separate the two, because both of those are some issues that has an impact on us all. I mean, we are all impacted by failing schools in our cities. Everybody is impacted by that. Because what ends up happening is in that particular school area, school district, whatever, you have communities that go unserved. And you may have to live in that community. And so now you're not getting all the services in which you potentially need. And so you have it's an education problem that we have, and we have a poverty problem, because we've been taught that education is what will lift you up out of poverty. That's not to say, and I'm glad you made the comment that, you know, you may be born into something, but you don't, you know, you make a choice whether or not you want to stay there. So, you know, I can look at my own life and say, by the numbers, you know, I was born into poverty. I mean, I wasn't even born in a hospital. I was born at home back in 1968. So, you know, the fact is, looking at that situation and how I was the family, two or three families living in two homes, you know, that wasn't a mansion, you know, that it was a three-room house. So I was born into a certain type of demographic and a certain type of economic status, but we valued education, and we knew that education was the way out of that. Those in my family that believe that, we have matriculated out of that level of poverty, and we have made some strides, because we knew in order to do so, if we wanted more than what we saw, we had to get an education. And there are those in my family that chose not to, that was okay with where they were. So I think you have a combination of looking at, you know, the crisis that we're facing educationally and the crisis we're facing in poverty, which if we're supposed to be the best country in the world and we have all these freedoms, then how is it that we have, A, so many people in poverty, and be so many people that go hungry every day? It just doesn't add up to me. I'm trying to figure out, how did we get here? You know, how did we get to such large numbers of children getting to the third and fourth grade and can't read, don't know how to spell their names, don't know how to count money? How did we get to that point where children go hungry once they leave school every day? What happened? And so until we address those issues, not only about what causes poverty and why people may choose to stay in poverty and why schools began to fail our children, not only they fail our children, but they fail the people that was there to help educate. And I'm not a teacher, but I love the profession, and it was actually the when I was growing up, what do you want to be when you grow up? Two things. I would say a lawyer and a teacher. And for some reason, I haven't done either one of them, but I know a lot about both of them. So, but because I saw the impact that teachers had in our lives. And so how did we go from nurturing and valuing education to treating it as though it's something that, you know, it's a luxury? I don't understand that. So we have a problem. Our problem is both of them. We have a poverty problem and we have an education problem.
Okay, you know what I like in your field. We've been talking about this for an extended period of time. You always used to talk about the fact that when you as a director of a facility, and you had these juveniles come in, and you had to address the violent activity or the drug activity or the sexual deviant activity, you always said that you really needed to address them. And in a lot of cases, you could not address them in parallel. You had to determine which one you should do first, right? And so mm-hmm. you've done a lot of work in that area. And I want to take that same ideology, and I want to transfer it to now this issue of poverty and education. When in a lot of cases, you really can't address them both, right? Here we have another chicken and the egg problem, just like we were talking about with your juveniles, right? So now we have another chicken and the egg problem with this poverty and education. And if you look at the fact that poverty is the current condition that a person in, and this has a lot to do with the food, it has a lot to do with the violence, it has to do with the neighborhoods, a lot to do with the parents. And then you have this education thing where you have the it's sort of will, and it's so it's also a part of a support infrastructure, but also food, violence, and parents also take a part in that component too, because without proper nutrition, a child cannot be attentive. If he's in a violent and looking around his neighborhood and has to dodge bullets every now and then, that also affects his behavior to concentrate. And if he doesn't have supportive parents, then it also is going to affect his ability to do his homework, to stay on task, to focus and do those things. So when I look at both of these type of components, poverty on the one hand and education on the other hand, and I look at this as a chicken and the egg problem, Jima, which one can a person address first?
Well, I say you address the one that you have the most control over, and for that would be education. Because if you're a child or if you're a young adult or whatever, and you're still living at home and you got all those things going on around you, you really don't have any control over your environment just yet. And so you take full advantage of the opportunities that you do have educationally as much as you can in terms of studying, as much as you can in terms of letting someone know what your barriers are. The problem is a lot of times we don't let someone know what our barriers are. And so that way, and because of that, then we don't find any way to move or maneuver around those barriers. The wall may be there, but you might not have to break down the whole wall. And the wall may not be that thick. But, you know, you might could just punch the wall and get through. But you're thinking you got to get a bulldozer and you know, measure all. And you may not even have to do all that work. You might just need to punch. But if you never talk about what the barriers is, someone may be able to give you some information. And so what we have to do is look at the environment in which we have some control over. You know, even if it's minimum control, I have control over showing up at school. I have control over that. As a child, as a young adult, I do have control over if I'm going to school today or tomorrow. And so because of that, when I'm there, then I have control on how I'm going to pay attention in class. That has nothing to do with my mama because she's not in class. That has nothing to do with my dad who's not there and who ain't in the home or who's an alcoholic or my mama who on drugs. None of that has anything to do with what I'm doing in class at that moment because those people are not there. But what we tend to do is we tend to put all that stuff in a basket and say, see, this is why I can't because of my mom and my daddy or where I live or all of my circumstances. But when you're in school, hopefully that should be the safest place for you for those 6 to 8 hours you're there. And so we have to teach them to take full advantage of the time that they're in that situation because it's in that situation they get the grades they need. It's not going to matter who can afford to send them because they're going to have the right grades to get the scholarships and the grants to go to school. And so that will then, as they continue to grow and develop and learn, that will begin to lift them up out of their current situation where they will have more control, and they don't have to live where they have always lived because they know now there's other places to live. You know, I have family that have never left Arkansas. They may have left where we were born in Helena, but the furthest they got was Little Rock. And so, and in the same situation that they was in Helena, so all they did was move cities. But when you go out and explore and you experience other things, then you know that there's something else there. And so the education, in my opinion, will begin to lift them up out of that, and they can see something different. Sometimes all it takes is seeing and knowing and believing that there is something different that you can then strive for. And you get that through, in my opinion, through the education. So I think, in that sense, you pulling back the layers, you know, you start with education and you see where that takes. And that doesn't always mean formalized or four-year degree or whatever. It could be, you know, a trade school. It could be going to a business school and figuring out what kind of business you want to open. It could be an array of things. But you have to start there, I think, in order to begin to see yourself out of your current poverty situation.
You know, I like the fact that you didn't just relegate the answer to or the education response to just college, right? You mentioned trade school. And oftentimes, I remember an undergraduate, we used to have these conversations about who was right, W.B. Du Bois or Booker T. Washington. And the fact that Booker T. Washington was talking about trade activities and W.B. Du Bois was talking about a full, you know, a skill level that was, you know, four-year college type of ownership type of deal, right? But the answer is they're both were right, right? It's not
right.
An either or. It's not that you have to go to a trade school only, or it's not that you need to go to a four-year degree. I think that both opportunities should be available, and you should choose the one that is based on your unique character, your unique skill set, your unique abilities, right? And so I really can appreciate your response to that. But I want to pick up on something. I want to pull on this thread a little bit that you talked about removing barriers. In a lot of cases, the barriers that present themselves are out of the person's control. It may be out of the community's control. It may be out of the parents' control. It may be out of the child's control. It may be out of the teacher's control or the school's control. And then when that is the case, a lot of times government assistance or government programs come in and to help facilitate removal of barriers, removal of those things that are out of the control of the community, the school, the parents, or the student. And so, but if you have an administration that's not focused on providing funding for programs that can remove those barriers, then how can a society that's poor in nature pull themselves out of this situation?
Well, you only have to go back to your history to see that. I mean, do we think that the colleges and universities and schools that were started with the help of government? I don't think so. I don't think when Mary McLeod Bethune decided that it was that she needed to open up something because they wasn't getting the right kind of education, I don't think she put in for a grant and they gave her the money to do it. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. So you have the people that want to do it have to have a will and a desire to do so. I mean, you go back in time, and when Harriet was ready to say, you know, I'm free, she didn't wait on somebody to say, okay, you can go on, y'all can go north, and then y'all will be free. We're just going to let y'all pass through. No, she fought her way through that, you know, and went through, you know, the wee hours of the night and the morning and the cold and the rain to get there. She fought for that. So if we're waiting on someone to give us or say it's okay, yeah, that's a good idea, go ahead on and build that school for them, then we've already lost. And unfortunately, that's where we are right now. We have already lost because we keep waiting on someone else to assist us. If the government never comes, does that mean my child goes without getting what they're supposed to get? And the answer to that should be no. I have to figure out what to do. And if that means I'm up reading a book late at night so that I'm ahead of my child in their school, then that's what I need to find myself doing. But see, we have given up the fight. Because we don't fight and nothing comes easy, because we become so short-sighted and can only see for 2.5 seconds is our attention span, we forget that those that came before us didn't have a tenth of the luxuries that we have right now. Not a hair of some of the things that we have right now that we take for granted. And so they fought to make it happen. They up reading in the middle of the night with a flashlight because it was that important to them, teaching themselves how to read, listening to Massanem in the house talking, and then remembering it and trying to figure out how to sound those words out. You know, so those sorts of things, people fought. People had desire. People had will. And we've lost that will to fight. That's my opinion.
Well stated. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this will of the American people, the will to do more, the will to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in just a moment.
You are listening to Kind of Friends with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Today, we're asking the simple question, do we have a poverty crisis or an education crisis in America? And we've been talking a little bit about all of the talk shows and all of the things that's been going on over the last couple of weeks. In particular, we mentioned Bill Maher and the fact that he had John Legend on and the great points that he made addressing the issues that was going on in Chicago with the unions. And we also mentioned Tavis Smiley and the fact that he was on Morning Joe and he was talking about taking this poverty book tour. I mean, this poverty tour. To sell his book or at least to address poverty. And he's going on around the battleground states as opposed to the poverty states to talk about poverty, right? And I phrased it and I framed the whole comment in this way because I want to play a comment that he made. And Jim, I want you to address this comment, and I wanted you to get your take on this. Take a listen. And I'm going to set it up. So he's having this conversation on Morning Joe, and he's simply talking about the fact that the conventions, what came out of the Democratic convention and what came out of the Republican convention. He talked about how much the two conventions address poverty, right? And so he uses this analysis based on the number of mentions. And I want you to take a listen to this statement, and then we're going to discuss that very briefly. Take a listen.
There you go. Tavis, you've been critical of the president, obviously, but we are in election season.
Mm-hmm.
So the alternative at this point would be Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
Is that a good alternative in terms of these issues?
Well, my alternative is to call for truth
to ask both of them to be honest and level with the American people. My alternative is to hold both of them accountable. Dr. West and I have said consistently on this tour and everywhere else that on this issue and many other issues, we think that Barack Obama is clearly a better choice than Mitt Romney on many of these issues. But I do find this interesting, Mika, and you probably got, I'm sure you guys saw this, the New York Times, their search engine allows us to discover that the Democrats use the word poor or poverty three times for every 25,000 words at their convention. The Democrats, three times for every 25,000 words, the word poor or poverty. And Bill Clinton said it 11 times, so he won the record. Of course, he spoke for 2 hours longer than anybody else as well, so he had more time to get it out. The Republicans, though, Willie, you'll find fascinating, Joe, the Republicans used the word poor or poverty five times for every 25,000 words. So when it comes to at least raising the issue, the Republicans did it, interestingly, more than the Democrats did at their convention.
Now, come on. So when is it, when has it ever been the case that we measure what we're doing with respect to poverty or education, as we're talking about today, by the number of mentions that a convention uses the word vis-a-vis the number of policies that they actually are advocating for or passing through the measure of bills? So how is it we've got to a point where we're talking about the number of mentions versus the number of policies?
When you've lost your way and when you have allowed yourself to be pimped out by the very corporations that are having a hand in this spiralness of poverty. So for Tavis to even, in my opinion, embarrass himself by bringing up such a statistic, It saddens me, because as you stated, you know, for the person who says I love you, and yet treats you like gum on the bottom of their shoe, I'd rather you not even tell me you love me, because that's not how you treat me. So I don't care if the Republicans said poverty or poor 1,000,000,000 times. Your policies are not remotely connected to your words. So it doesn't matter. I don't care if the Democrats never said the word poverty or poor, but if their policies are addressing the issue, that's what I'm most concerned about. So that whole conversation, I think I walked out the room, because I can't handle nonsense. And all that is a bunch of nonsense, in my opinion. They're talking out of both sides of their neck. And as you stated, why right now in the month of September and October are you going on your poverty tour 2.0 in battleground states, and yet you want to tell me it's not political? Give me a break. And while you out on this quote-unquote poverty tour in the states that you're going to, which, by the way, a couple of them have some pretty suppressive voter registration issues, are you getting people registered to vote? Are you making sure that you got some deputies there that can register people to vote in these quote-unquote battleground states? Why don't you go to the states that's experiencing the highest level of poverty? If you want to impress me and talk about poverty, how many job trainings have you done on your poverty tour to help the people that's coming to see you? That's what I'm trying to figure out. So have you registered anybody to vote? Have you gave any job training? Have you assisted anybody on any way? Do you have any people there talking about foreclosure and how to avoid it, or bankruptcy? You know, what are some of the options for people right now? Do you have anybody there talking about college and making sure that it's affordable and making sure that those sophomores in high school know what's expected of them to get into the colleges that they want to get to? What are you doing to help lift people out of poverty? Because just talking about what the president or whoever you're saying you're going to vote for will do in terms of their – this is what I was talking about earlier, about the things you can't control. See, my control over the policy is limited because of I have to vote, right? In order for me to vote, I have to be registered to vote. In order for me to be registered to vote, I have to have the right documentation that's going to give me the right photo ID that is going to allow me to exercise my right to vote. In the meantime, though, see, while he's over there and they're over there on this on this, who said poverty more than a convention?
Book tour.
You have an audience captive that comes to hear you spew whatever that nonsense is you spewing, but are you going into, as the old country folk used to say, the hedges and the highways? Are you going down to the core of where the issue is? So when you go to Virginia, what part of Virginia are you going to? Are you going to Norfolk State and registering and making sure that those students on campus have the right ID? Or when you go to Pennsylvania, are you making sure that those students, because their student's ID doesn't have an expiration date, that's not considered valid in the state of Pennsylvania? So are you going there doing anything besides coming out with all this rhetoric about some nonsense? Do something while you're there. That's the thing that makes me, you know, I support Reverend Sharpton because he does something about what he's doing. He don't just talk about it. He doesn't take a whole lot of corporate money. This whole poverty tour is being sponsored by Wells Fargo and Walmart. Give me a break.
So this book tour, again, forgive
whatever.
Me.
Whatever.
This poverty
tour.
Yeah, your
speaking
that
team tour, whatever.
Right,
yeah,
right, right,
yeah.
Right. This poverty tour.
Yeah, you're being funded.
Right.
And so let's talk about who's funding you and what their commitment is to poverty, what their commitment
exactly.
is to helping people in the community.
Right.
Let's talk about that.
So how is it we get these two intellectuals to just now put themselves in a position to bash the president, in other words, and talk about poverty, but really not doing anything about poverty, not taking up part of society and says, look, we're going to focus on this sector, and this is going to be concentrated on, as opposed to reaching our hand out that says, hey, here's what you need to do as a president, as opposed to here's what I need to do as a citizen to change this, because I have control over this.
Well, see, the problem with Tavis and Dr. West is how they started this whole process. And they started it from a point of it being personal and it not being really connected or really on any sort of real foundation of merit. So because of that, everything they say now, one is looking at it through the lenses of it being tainted based on how they originally came out. I have no problem with anyone, quote unquote, wanting to hold this administration or any elected official accountable, or as they say in their words, feet to the fire. My problem is I am 44 years old, and in my entire lifetime of being aware of what's going on in the political arena, I have not heard from Dr. West or Tavis the same energy they have now about poverty and the poor in the previous administration. And let's be clear, we have more people that are that fall in that poverty line and in the poor line because of the previous administration than this current one. So if they was going to be jumping on top of tables, writing books about the rich and the least of and whoever, then why wasn't they doing it under Bush?
Right.
Because he created this high level of poverty that we see. Now, let's be clear. Scripture tells us that there will always be the poor among us. I get that. Scripture also tells us that we're to take care of the children and the widow. Now, you show me how the policies of Mitt Romney is taking care of the children and the widow.
Yeah, yeah. And why not talk about holding them accountable for their legislation, not just their rhetoric?
So you're out talking about what the president hasn't been able to do, talking out of both sides, because then you say, but his hands has been tied, but then he wasn't really fighting hard enough. So you tell me what your first conversation going to be with Mitt Romney. Because you're probably not even going to get a conversation. Let's put that in the atmosphere. No one is going to have you on Fox News talking about Mitt Romney like they got you on Fox News talking about President Obama.
Right, right, right. Ain't gonna happen.
Now we gotta call that out as we see it. You're not gonna be on Morning Joe talking about Mitt Romney like you talking about President Obama. It's just not gonna happen. Matter of fact, Walmart and Wells Fargo will not fund your tour.
Come on, be real now. Be real. That's right. Say it. Say it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you want to talk about Mitt Romney and like you talk about President Obama. Let's just call that what it is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Get your hand in my pocket type deal.
And so, you know, I mean, we have to look at this thing from all angles. And like I stated, I don't have a problem with you having some criticism. I don't agree with everything that the president has done. I do not. I don't agree with everything I do some days.
So, me either, for that matter.
What, you don't agree with everything I do?
That's right.
But I look at the big picture. I'm going to let you slide. I look at the big picture, and I see I might not be the one needing that, but there's somebody that I know that may need that. So in everything that he's doing, he has to do it for the entire country, not a segment of people. And the fact that you got Tavis and Dr. West out there talking about poverty, you keep putting the face of poverty to be black people.
Mm.
The face of poverty. Mm. See, and that's mm-hmm. the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. Go on and find one of your white counterparts and bring them with you.
Right.
Because the face of poverty isn't just black.
That's right. That's right.
We know that. We know that the percentages show that there's more white people that receive assistance than black people.
That's right.
We know that. So you really need to have you need to have another face out there, because it looks as though it's all just about black people. I don't mind you talking about poverty, but let's talk about poverty. Go to rural Arkansas. Go to rural Mississippi. Go to West Virginia. You understand what I'm saying? Go to the tobacco roads in North Carolina and Kentucky. You know, that if you want to talk about poverty, go where these people don't even have running water. Go to the fact that they got to take a boat to get to the other side of the water to go to the doctor, because where they are, don't nobody come over there. See, if you want to talk about poverty, see, you need to go where it is really poverty, not this made up number about poverty. See, some people think they living in poverty, and all they really need to do is cut off a few things, and they wouldn't be in poverty no more.
Right, right, right.
They give up a few luxuries. I'm talking about go down to the country, to where people still have outhouses.
Right.
That's where and why is that in the richest country in the world, we have people that live like that? Why is that? If you want to talk to me about poverty, that's where I want you to go, because I sure want to know what their school system looks like.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to shift the conversation now a little bit to the GOP. You mentioned Mitt Romney and his policies, but it seems to me that the Mitt Romney campaign is slowly falling apart. There's an article in Huffington Post via BuzzFeed that states this. Mitt Romney's campaign for president appears to have quietly abandoned its guiding assumption that the election would center on the struggling economy and has visibly begun to feel for a new message. Romney and particularly his running mate, Representative Paul Ryan, have spent a week road testing alternatives, going positive and going negative, swinging at the president on everything from faith to foreign policy. The new effort marked a shift from a summer of fruitless discipline and a convention in which attempts to present a friendly, moderate tone trumped any policy substance. And campaign planners said their moves mark a new campaign consensus. And what is going on, Jima, with the Romney campaign? They talked about, you know, going on with the economy. They try to talk about, I mean, the campaign really has no substance. No one knows what the Romney campaign stands for. So what is going on with does the GOP need to change their process? Do they need to change their plan? What's going on with them?
Well, in order to change the plan, you have to have one. Their plan.
All right.
I mean, really. So they never had a plan. They thought they had a strategy, which was to make the American public not like President Obama. That was all they had, was to make them not like, was to make people not like him, to make people not trust him. And so they was just going to come up with all these lies and distortions. And so for a while it worked. And then, as they say, something happened on the way to the convention, right? And what happened is that the covers were pulled off, where you realize that the suit that everybody had on at the convention was just the same suits they had on the mannequins in the window at the store.
It's empty. Empty suit. Right.
Looking good, but you ain't saying nothing.
Right.
You're not saying nothing about what you're going to do. You're not saying nothing about how you're going to change anything, because you don't have a plan. And your only answer is, well, we know whatever we say, people are just going to pick it apart. Well, that's what we're supposed to do. I'm not going to just let you walk up to me on the street and say, I need $1,000, and I'm not going to ask you what you need it for.
Right.
I'm not going to ask you when I'm going to get it back. I'm not going to ask you what you're going to do with it. Oh, no. You know, I'm not doing that. That's what Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan want us to do. They want us to just say, okay, you're right, the economy is bad, although 8%, 8.2% is less than 91-point-something%, because 91-point-something% of people are working. I just
That's
don't understand
right.
why they don't talk about that number as much as they talk about the 8.2 number.
Yeah,
but, you
point.
Know, it just baffles me. So they never had a plan. So, and you can't, you know, I often say, you know, you can't give something you don't have. Mitt Romney can't give us a plan because he doesn't have one.
You know,
Mitt Romney can't show compassion because he doesn't know what that is. Mitt Romney can't speak to the issues of the average American in the United States because he's never lived an average life. So he can't give something he doesn't have. And it's not to knock his wealth, because I know plenty of wealthy people that still have compassion.
Right.
He doesn't
have
it.
Right.
So he can't give it. He doesn't have a plan, so he can't give us a plan.
You know that's
really
interesting.
Simple. It's really not rocket science, this one. This time it's really, as President Clinton said, this is really just basic arithmetic. Basic.
Yeah. So
we're not even in long division.
Right.
We're in 1+1.
So what's interesting here is you've said several times about this not having a plan, and the fact that it's one thing for me as the casual observer to look at Mitt Romney and to try to determine what is he about, right? If I need to be a voter, and I need to make sure that I'm voting on the issues and not about the person, well, there's a clear delineation of what President Obama stands for, but I'm not so sure on what Mitt Romney stands for. So me as a casual observer, I can understand, yeah, I'm not on the Beltway. Yeah, I'm not rich. I'm not wealthy. I don't hang out with this guy. Or I'm not that well-versed in all of the political areas that I need to be. So, yeah, I could be missing a point. But it is another thing when a governor, a past governor like Governor Huntsman, that's well-versed on a lot of issues, don't even know what Mitt Romney stands for. To me, that's a problem. He is a Republican, a strong supporter of Republican ideas, and for him to not even understand what Mitt Romney stands for, we have a problem. I want you to take a listen to what what Governor Huntsman had to say about Mitt Romney on Morning Joe the other day. Take a listen to this, and it goes to exactly what you're talking about by not having a plan. And Jim, I want you to get you to respond. Take a listen.
at any negotiating table.
Halpern.
We lack that leverage.
Governor Mark Halpern here. Nice to see you. We don't have a lot of time, but I'm asking you to do something complicated in a short space, which is, rather than criticize, if you could educate from your learned perspective, what is the basic difference between President Obama's strategy and philosophy towards dealing with the Arab Spring versus what Governor Romney is proposing?
Well, I don't know what Governor Romney is proposing at this point, and I'm a little confused on what Romney is doing.
That's kind of a problem, isn't it, that you don't know what Mitt Romney is proposing?
It's kind of a problem, but let's remember this. This is a time for reflection.
And so, and Governor Huntsman was kind of put on the spot there, and he was kind of, not necessarily put on the spot, he was just asked a normal question that one asks, right? You know, what does your candidate stand for on a particular issue? And he tried to dodge around it, but he had to, he had to be truthful. He had to be truthful and say what you so eloquently stated, that he doesn't know what Mitt Romney stands for. So me, as the casual observer, if I don't know what he stands for is one thing, but to say Governor Huntsman don't understand, we really have a problem with this candidate. What do you think, Jim?
And we've had a problem with this candidate since the beginning. I mean, I don't know why people are acting so shocked and surprised at Mitt Romney. If you go back to the beginning of this, just this campaign, Mitt Romney ain't said nothing about what he's going to do. He's talked about what the president hasn't done. He talked about his other, when they were in the primary, he talked a lot about what everybody else was doing or had done, but he never talked about what he has done. He runs away from his record in Massachusetts, right, as governor,
which
which is something he should stand boldly on, being a former governor, and he runs away from what he's from all of his record at Bain Capital. So what you standing for?
Right.
This is not. Brent, I'm not surprised that we are, two weeks away from our first presidential debate, and you got people who are quote unquote supporters of Mitt Romney who don't have a clue on what his plan is, what his platform is, because Mitt Romney doesn't have. I'm just telling you, their whole strategy was to discredit the president. They did not want anything to look favorable for President Obama. So they've done everything in their power to make him look bad. But when you know what you know, and when you've been shown favor and promise, it doesn't matter what the other person is doing. You keep doing what you're doing. And that's what I absolutely love about President Obama. He does not allow the chatter in the wings to take him off focus. He hears all this nonsense these people are saying. He don't have time to come on TV every day and make a statement about something crazy. He is trying to keep us safe, not only from others, but from ourselves.
Amen, Sister Cook.
He is trying to keep us safe. So, you know, I am relishing, I am awaiting the moment. I believe the first debate is October 3rd. You know, I wouldn't mind having a watch party to watch the debate with both sides, Republicans and Democrats.
Oh, yeah.
To see, and then have a real discussion about what you heard, not what you thought you heard. The discussion would have to not be made up stuff. It would have to be on the answers given that night, and then you tell me who's best to lead the country.
You know, so we're coming up on the end of the show, but I want to ask a simple question before we do close out the show for today. And by the way, you've done another excellent job, as you always do. And I'm just so thankful to have you a part of the show because you really bring something more to current events. So here we go. We have Mitt Romney as the Republican nominee for President of the United States. And everybody see the fact that he's not ready to be president. He's not well versed on political issues. He doesn't have a plan. Nobody in the Republican Party knows what he stands for. After looking at all of these facts, what does this say, not about Mitt Romney, but about the electorate? What does this say about the Republican Party, who A, voted for him, and B, nominated him to be president of the United States. What does it say about them?
It says that they're not informed. It says that they have lost their way. It says that they're not going to vote in the best interest of themselves. They're going to vote based on their racial feelings about someone. It's sad because even when, I don't know if the poll was in Wisconsin or Ohio, and the question to them was, who was most responsible for the killing of bin Laden? And like 20-some-odd percent said the president. 30-some-odd, 40-some-odd percent said Mitt Romney. How did Mitt Romney have anything to do with killing bin Laden?
Exactly.
That's just pure, you know, that's just lunacy,
yeah,
at its
it
highest
is, it
level.
Is. Yeah.
So when you're dealing with that, you don't even deal with that. I mean, you know what I'm saying? When you see crazy coming, you just cross the street. Because
right,
there's nothing you're going to be able to do with that. That sector of the population, there is nothing you're going to be able to do with them. So you don't even address that. You go over here to the side that you think you might be able to make some inroads with, and those are the people that you talk to. I can't talk to the person that still want to talk about whether or not the president was born here. We don't have nothing to talk about.
Yeah.
And I don't respond to people that send me nonsense about whether or not he was born here. Because that's
right,
nonsense. Because
exactly,
not in my entire life have I ever got an email talking about whether or not the president was born here. From Bush to Clinton, Bush Daddy, Carter, Reagan. I ain't never got that. I've never seen
right,
that come. I've never seen that talked about on television before. So to play like it's not about him being black or African is ludicrous, because that's exactly what it is. So, you know, those people, you don't even spend any time on them. Let them vote. Let them lose everything they have. And then they're going to be the ones that, because, see, they already the ones in line getting all the government assistance.
That's right.
That's the funny part. They already get their check in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
They already got free health care.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
So we're closing in on the last part of the show. What are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts, I just wanted to give a shout-out to Pastor Freddie Haynes and Reverend Al Sharpton's voter engagement tour that the National Action Network is on right now. You can go to nationalactionnetwork.net and find out the next city that they will be in. It was an excellent workshop and meeting on Wednesday, this past Wednesday, September 12th. A lot of great information. If you're in the Dallas County area, you really need to find out what's going on in Dallas County, because it is amazing what's happening in Dallas County. And Commissioner Price was there, and he gave out a lot of good information that I think people should really, you know, focus, you know, try to focus in on and figure out in terms of registered voters here in the county, and how we're lacking on so many areas. So it's really, really important that people really start thinking about where we are. And you don't have much time left to get registered. Most of it is, I think the cutoff is October 5th or 6th, maybe the 8th. But whatever date it is in October, and it's coming up real soon. So I'm just going to ask that people please, go and find out if you're still on the rolls. If you've gotten a letter saying they're going to purge you, you need to find out what that's all about. This is critical, not because I'm a supporter of President Obama, but because I'm a supporter of my rights as a person whose ancestors were denied so many things for so long. I will not be denied my right to vote. I will not be denied my right to have equal education, equity, and equality in my education, because that's what Brown versus Topeka Board was all about. It was about things being fair and equal. And so I will not sit by and allow something to happen that is not equitable and fair across the board, because too many people laid down for that to happen and fought. They fought the system, they got in the system, and they helped change the system. And so that's what we have to learn to do as citizens now that are riding on the wave. One of the speakers said that the I'm going to find it because I think it's important on this note I just made about when the most dangerous time in battle is after you've had a victory, because you begin to relax, and then that's when your enemy comes in. And that's where we are right now with this voter suppression. We had a victory in the terms of the election of President Obama, and we relaxed ourselves, and that's when 2010 happened, and that's when all these governors got elected and all these people in our state houses got elected. And since they've been in office, that's how all these laws have been enacted. So we got relaxed. It's time now to put your battle gear back on, because we're still in a war. You know, we haven't won the war yet. So we need to get back and get girded up and get our minds back in the game. We are in the fight of our lives right now, and we are approaching the fourth quarter. And if we do not have on the right gear going into this last quarter, we're going to find ourselves on the outside looking in. So we've got to be ready. We've got to be ready to fight, and we have got to be ready to stay in for the entire process. Those are my final thoughts.
Well, outstanding once again. Outstanding. Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all the listeners for tuning in. And, of course, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent, Jima Hill Cook. Now, don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJima, AskJema. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade TalkRadio.blogspot.com. You're listening to the sounds of George Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, George.